Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter Podcast. My name, as always, is Tony Heil, your Communication and Public Policy Director here at the Greater Philadelphia Chapter. If you've been listening to past podcasts, you've heard stories from people living with ALS, veterans, people who organize walk teams, sponsors, even state legislators, and the president of the ALS Association, Barb Newhouse, as well as people involved in ALS research. There are a lot of ways that we fight ALS. We cover all the bases with patient care, advocacy, and research. And in this podcast, we like to show all of those bases and all of the approaches that we are working on for this mission. Today, we're talking about one of the more unique ways that you can raise money and awareness to fight ALS, and that's the NAME Fund program here at the Greater Philadelphia Chapter, which was started many years ago with our development person, Jeff Klein, here at the chapter. And I'm going to be talking with Lauren Santee, who is involved with the NAME Fund through her family, and what that's meant to her, what it meant to her family, and what they hope to accomplish with the fund to help people with ALS here in our community. As always, you can get involved with the fight against ALS through any one of our volunteer or donation projects at www.alsphiladelphia.org. You can find all of our podcasts at alsphiladelphia.org/podcasts or on iTunes, which is exciting. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest. I've even tried some Vine recently, at ALS Philadelphia. That's all one word. And you can email me with your questions or topics you'd like to see in future podcasts at tony@alsphiladelphia.org. So with all of that shameless self-promotion, let's get into the real conversation for today with our guest, Lauren Santee. Lauren, thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
So, Lauren, we're going to be talking about your family and ALS. And ALS is personal to everybody that gets involved. So tell me about your ALS connection and why you got involved.
So ALS became part of our family and intertwined with it when my mom was diagnosed, and I want to say the spring of 2008. She had some issues a couple months before, and as you know with ALS, there's not a set test to figure out if you have ALS or not, so you kind of have to test for other things and rule everything out. So when they finally told her that that's what she had, you know, they told all of us separately, and that's pretty much started our whole family getting involved with ALS and it becoming really a huge part of our family.
So she was diagnosed in 2008, and you said it took months to get to that diagnosis, probably?
Yeah, originally, you know, she felt tired. She just didn't feel herself. She went to, like, her regular physician, and he just kind of brushed it off. You know, it's probably nothing. You know, just go home. It might just be, like, a bug, something like that. And she was pretty convinced that there was something wrong. You know, she was taking naps during the day, which I don't think I've ever seen her take a nap in my whole life. So that was unusual. And then they started getting really concerned when she started having difficulties doing pretty normal thing. She always takes walks like every day with our dogs, and we live on a hill, and it's a pretty steep hill, and she was having difficulty walking up the hill with my dad, so that was really alarming for us because she's done this for more than 20 years and never had an issue. And as it kept progressing, she even had difficulties at a wedding going up, I think it was like 3 stairs she had to hold on to my dad. So when they finally diagnosed it, that's when we pretty much figure out what it was.
So for a lot of people, especially who are newer after the Ice Bucket Challenge and they are just learning about ALS, their first image is sometimes the later symptoms of it. They see someone in a wheelchair, unable to speak. But your biggest memories are those first instances. They were probably, so those were pretty jarring that they seemed to be so seared into your mind how that started happening.
Yeah, you know, we knew that there was something wrong and we didn't know what, but it was serious enough that there was definitely a question that this could be something pretty serious or life-threatening. So I think our whole family was pretty worried during that time.
And how many people are in the family that ended up being concerned?
Well, in my family, there's 5 of us. I have 2 siblings, a brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And I also, our next-door neighbors are my dad's brother, so my aunt, uncle, and my 2 cousins. So kind of our family as a whole was getting very concerned.
Well, and that's an important part. We talk about how family matters to a person with ALS later in the prognosis, but really, and that start, that everyone probably saw some symptoms and things at that time then.
Right, yes.
Saw that things were different.
Yeah, that there's just something off. And I guess we just wanted an explanation so we could fix it or take care of it or, you know, just figure out what it was.
So the diagnosis of ALS was obviously devastating. Did you know anything about ALS at that time?
So when we heard the diagnosis, I think it was different for all of us. My sister, our parents told us all separately. When they told my sister, she was, you know, she was basically beside herself. She was really upset because she knew what it was. Her coworker slash friend had just had a father who passed away from it, so she was really upset about it. For me, I had zero knowledge of what ALS was. So when they told me, I kind of just took bits and pieces of what they were saying and made my own conclusion. I remember them sitting me down and they said, you know, we figure out what it is. It's ALS, it's terminal, but it's slow progressing. So I kind of held on to that last part of it. So I kind of made up this image in my head that it's just going to be, you know, something she's going to have to live with. It might be a bit of a hassle for her, but it's going to be fine. You know, everything's going to keep being fine. But
because you couldn't see beyond those first instances were not being in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
But they were still like, oh, this is something we could deal with.
Yeah, I didn't even really know. I don't think I even really realized that she would be going into a wheelchair and everything. Mm-hmm. I think it was just going to be something that she would have to overcome, but we would deal with. So when things started to take off, it was pretty shocking and devastating, I think.
And how old was everyone when this happened?
I was just starting. It was the end of my senior year when she first got her diagnosis.
Of high school?
I was 18, yeah. Okay. And then when you started seeing everything, I was away at my freshman year of college. So I was like 18, 19. My brother is 2 years older than me, and then my sister was 25 at the time.
So pretty young.
Yeah.
But also not so young that you didn't know what was going on.
Right.
Young enough that, I mean, you're very close to the family. And this being 2008, as opposed to families 10 years ago, you could all go online and look up, what is this?
Yeah. I don't think I really actually researched it. I actually researched it more towards the end of it and after. Mm-hmm. Like, I spent a lot of time researching it, but I think I almost didn't really want to accept it and know.
Yeah.
So I just kind of avoided it a little bit.
And what was your mom's perspective then at learning about it? Did she go diving in to know as much as possible?
I think she did. I think both my parents did. They wanted to find the best ways to help her, for her to cope with it. And I think she became part of this, like, online community called PAL, so it's people with ALS. So, I think she definitely wanted to know about it.
And did you guys get connected to the chapter during that time?
Yeah, we started getting involved with the Greater Philadelphia chapter all during this time. And they were a significant help to us because, you know, when you get this result, you're kind of, I don't know, you feel kind of on your own. You don't really know what to do. And there is a lot of things that they did for us. They had therapists coming in. They taught my dad how to pick her up, how she should be handled, just like basically doing everyday things. They offered therapy for all of us if we wanted to talk to them about what we were going through. So they were a really big help during this time. And they're also giving us equipment as everything was progressing. Mm-hmm. So
we talk about how we serve between 850 and 900 people with ALS, but it's more than that because those services are beneficial to you, to five other people in this family.
Yeah.
And hopefully that took a lot of pressure off.
Yeah, I think it definitely did because, as you know, that big wheelchair, the one that the ALS patients end up in, costs so much money. So if people don't have that money or something, that's just another pressure that you're putting on the family. Now you might have to worry about money or something as you're trying to deal with this illness. So, and it was also just, there's always someone there that we could talk to, or if you needed something or you didn't understand or how was this going to go, or people reassuring you, and they were always there. So it was helpful for all of us, yet not just her, it was for all of us.
And you're getting advice throughout this, and I don't know who you were talking with at our chapter, because I wasn't there. But for a family facing ALS, what kind of advice helps? Is it people who are giving you the upsides and trying to make it easy, or do you like, is it helpful to be blunt? Was it different for all members of your family, like how to get that kind of advice and help?
I think we all definitely want to know what was going on. I don't think we want to be kept in the dark. I felt like we were old enough that we could understand what was happening, no matter how hard it was, what you had to say to us. But sometimes encouragement and just understanding of what she was going through too, it was just helpful.
Mm-hmm. So did that help you interact with your mom more? Because I'm sure it was very difficult for her.
Yeah, it was definitely really difficult for her. And as it progressed too, she was getting more confused a little bit too. So that was difficult too, because you feel kind of like frustrated and sad all in one, because she's kind of not making sense.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, I like remember she was asking me, I was going to Princeton with my friend and we were going shopping and she wanted phone numbers for like the stores,
mm-hmm.
just to check up on me. And I was like, I didn't even really know how to respond to that, because I was like, but I don't have any numbers, like,
right.
You know, I don't have any numbers to give you.
You don't even know what stores you're going to go to.
Yeah, and I felt really, like, flustered by it, because I also have a cell phone at the time.
Right.
And I remember there's a nurse who happened to be there at that time, and she was kind of, you know, reassuring me
mm-hmm.
that, you know, like, it's fine. I just said basically, like, okay, you know, whatever you want. I don't think I ended up giving her the numbers, but I think they were kind of talking to her and talking to me and just, you know, explained to me that she was a little confused at this moment, and yeah, but I remember that was a very odd moment.
Oh, I can imagine it.
Yeah, there was like a couple, actually. I remember my sister, she was the most horrified one that she heard was she had a purse, like on a chair. My mom asked if she got a new dog. Mm. My sister was very taken aback, and she was pretty upset, actually, by that, because it was seeing how far this was progressing.
And those kind of issues are harder, I'm sure, than seeing something like not being able to move a hand or a leg.
Yeah.
That's something you can deal with in your head.
Yeah, now it was starting to, I guess oxygen wasn't going to her brain, so she was starting to get confused, and medicines and stuff like that. So yeah.
I know in my family, my grandfather had ALS, and I remember in the last few months, I don't know what the reasoning was for it, but like he would not necessarily get my grandmother's name right and things like that. And that was harder than knowing he couldn't move his legs.
Right.
And he was in a wheelchair and having to pick up, move his legs physically. But those kind of issues were harder for anyone to deal with.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's harder to understand it, because I think you can get past someone being in a wheelchair, or this is their handicapped now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can deal with it. You can help them whenever they need you. But when it starts affecting their brain and they start saying things that don't make sense, it's kind of like pushing in the knife a little bit. I think it hurts a little bit more.
So it's been a few years since that.
Yes. It'll be 6 in August.
And I am sorry that for all that. And,
thank you.
It makes me realize we had our annual luncheon, Kurt Schilling, who's been involved with the Phillies with us for many years, and the Phillies were the principal charity of the Phillies.
Yes.
I'm glad to have their support. But he mentioned that because of working with us and his kids working volunteering, that they gain an appreciation and respect for people in wheelchairs and who are disabled. Do you think going through that as a young person, well, you know, not that you were a kid, but, you know, does that give you a different appreciation for dealing with people with different kinds of disabilities?
I think so.
Not that you weren't a good person to begin with.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I felt actually a little bit more protective of her when she was in a wheelchair. I didn't really, you know, I guess feel like people kind of like glance at you a different way, maybe, mm-hmm. if you're in a wheelchair. And I felt kind of protective, like, don't look at her, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that makes you more conscious, too, that you really shouldn't be treating anyone different, whether in a wheelchair or not.
Right.
You know? And having your family member go from being able to walk and run and be healthy to not being able to move definitely changes your perspective.
Yeah. I see that here with a lot of families, especially when it was, you know, when not that it's bad if you're, you know, no matter the age, but when you're see a parent and you're only in your teens or 20s and you see someone, it definitely impacts your perspective for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So following that, you guys decided to get involved and give back. And so how did you decide to on what to do? Because you ultimately decided to create this name fund.
Yes. So after, during her funeral, we had asked people to not send flowers, to donate to the association.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, there was a huge influx of money that was being sent in memory of her to the association. So we got contacted by Jeff Klein, and he said, you know, we have all this money coming from her. Would you like to set up a fund? And that's how we ended up setting up a fund for her, which is, they support three patient services. That was the most helpful for us, mm-hmm. and for her. And then during this time, that was in 2011, it was established. Me and my siblings and my cousin, one of my cousins that lived next door, we really wanted to do something. We wanted to start something that we could help raise money for her fund and do this every year. So we thought about it for a while, and we came up with doing this event called the Casey Classic. And we hold it every May. We just finished our third year this past May. And we do it the first or second week in May because May is ALS Awareness Month, and May 2nd was my mom's birthday. So we felt it was the most appropriate month to do it. And basically, we do CrossFit workouts, and then we do a raffle after it. And all of that money goes to her charity fund. And we chose to do this because she was definitely like into fitness. She was always taking walks and she took care of her body. So this was kind of helping to commemorate her. And also, there's also that idea behind the ALS walks, the slogan, we walk because we can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like we work out because we can, you know.
Yeah.
Just another idea, because ALS patients, they can't do this. So if you have the ability to still be able to work out and walk and run, then you should do something, you know. So we do this fun, and it's been really awesome.
So what's been the response to it since you started in 2011?
Well, the fund we started in 2011, and then the following year, we started the charity event.
Well, okay, so you've been doing it for a few years now.
Yeah.
So the response has changed, I guess, over the years, because a lot has happened since you first started. But what was the initial response? Did people just do it because they like CrossFit? Did they do it because of your connection? Like, did you get some casuals?
Well, it was a combination. So we do it at CrossFit Stealth, which is in New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a gym that my sister and my cousin go to. They're both into CrossFit. My brother's into CrossFit. He does it up in Boston where he lives. And CrossFit Stealth, the good thing about CrossFit Stealth especially is that they have a really like family, community-like feeling to them. It's not just going to the gym, workout, leave. You know, they kind of become friends and family. So they also do a lot of like charity events. So that's kind of where we thought that we should do ours there. So we got a lot of support from other CrossFitters that go to the gym. They came to it, family, friends, my friends, and just, so it's been mostly people that know us, I think.
Yeah.
Besides some CrossFit people that might have not known us originally, but know us now.
Well, now you know. So that's, so they become friends, or they get connected, and then they're going to come back the next time.
Yeah.
And it's
friends
fun.
Bringing friends, so.
And I'm sure you find that if there's something fun to do, people are more likely to do it.
Yeah. I think people get really excited for it, because it's fun, because you get to do the CrossFit workout, and the CrossFitters like it, some of the other people don't like the work, like doing the workout, because it's mm-hmm. hard, and you feel really sore after. But then we have food after, we have the raffle prizes, so it's like an event, it's a fun event.
How long does it take you to organize it?
We start kind of in late fall, early winter, talking about it, picking the date, starting to send out emails to get donations of prizes and food, things like that. And that's really when we start getting the ball rolling. But once it hits spring, we get closer, you know, we really kick it up a notch and start going door to door to places in New Brunswick, getting donations for food and hotels or pretty much anything. So
mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that goes into one day's event.
Yes, there's a lot of work. I can actually give a lot of credit to my older sister. She is really good at this.
Is this Erin?
Yes. Okay. She's a teacher, and she's just like this go-getter personality, and she, you know, she's kind of like the leading person in this, and mm-hmm. she tells like, you do this, you do this, you do this, and we all help, but she's kind of like the most organized, and this is what we need to get done. She's kind of like the leader of like me and my brother and my sister and my cousin and my brother-in-law, and we just kind of follow suit, but she's so good at organizing, and she loves doing it. Obviously, she gets so excited. We all get so excited for the event every year. So
nice. I know that with ALS and any real disease, it can cause strains for family relationships. It could also bring people together. And it sounds like this whole experience is keeping your family together even stronger than before. Well, I don't know about before, but keeping you very strong together.
Yeah, I think so. Because it's, you know, my brother and sister are the only ones that, I guess, right in our community, know how the other's feeling, because we all mm-hmm. lost the same mom, and so we all kind of went through the same thing, and, like, maybe we do talk about her, and we can't talk about her. My brother has more trouble talking about her, because he gets upset, but I think it did bring us together more. You know, we want to make sure we have everyone's back, and we're always there for each other, and mm-hmm. I think it's been good. I think it's been really good for us. And it's a fun thing to do together.
Well, I think fun is important, and people look at, well, I want to give money, but you can do more by adding the fun component to it. There's no reason you can't do something that's enjoyable for people.
I agree.
It brings you guys together. So you're doing this for Named Fund. What's it like knowing that you're donating pretty much directly in the name of your mom every year? Like, does that make it more special knowing that it's going to this specific thing?
I think it definitely makes it more special. It's really exciting, actually. I feel like when you see, you know, the ALS Association, they put on these big fundraisers and the walks, and there's so many people involved to do all this, and so much money is donated. So when you feel like, well, what can I do? You know, mm-hmm. just a person, I could maybe donate, but you don't feel like you could put on an event. So the fact that we could, and it was just like my siblings and my cousin, and we could just put on this event for people, that I felt really accomplished and really proud of that. And over these 3 years, we've raised like nearly $20,000 from the event. So that's, I don't know, just I feel very proud of it, and I think she would be really proud too. So the fact that it's going to her name fund, I think she would be really excited about this.
Especially knowing that it's going to the same services that
she's
using.
Exactly.
So for those of you interested in learning about how to do any of these events, to get involved with a named fund, you can contact Jeff Klein. That's jeff@alsphiladelphia.org. If you want to just do your own community partner event and that's not named fund related, that you can contact Ashley Hendricks here. That's ashley@alsphiladelphia.org. The emails should be pretty easy to figure out after you get two of them, but there's a lot of ways you can do fun events. There's no reason not to. And even if you want to do a walk and raise money for your walk team, you can register for a walk at www.gpcwalktodefeatals.org, GPC for Greater Philadelphia Chapter. And then you can do events like this, and that's fun. You know, you're able to do more than you ever thought possible.
Yes.
So speaking of more than you ever thought possible, a lot changed after last year with the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Huge change.
And so I saw you guys put together a bit of a video about what that impact was.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about, like, how the Ice Bucket Challenge felt to you guys, aside from cold.
Yeah. So I remember when it was all happening, I saw it on one friend's Facebook first, and they said they were doing it for ALS. So my first thought, and I think it was a group thought, my siblings too, you know, this has to be for something else. This isn't for ALS that we know, because ALS is hardly ever in the news or the media. So when I asked what it was for and I found out that it was for ALS, I was really excited about it. And then it started really taking off, and you started seeing pretty much everyone on your social media doing it. Then you started seeing celebrities doing it, mm-hmm. and they were donating tons of money at a time, like $20,000. So we were getting really excited about it. We have a group text, and we were sending all these links of all these people doing it. We were really excited about it. And it was huge. I mean, some people criticized it, but when they saw the numbers and how much money was brought in, I mean, it was amazing, truly.
Yeah. So how many people did you guys get to do it in your circle?
My brother was the one who challenged us. We did it, and then I think we did, like, a couple people each. So mm-hmm. kind of, like, spread out, and they kept doing it.
Mm-hmm. And you could keep following that tree and be like,
yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, that leads back to me or leads back to whoever.
Yeah. And some people, too, we started seeing, like, family. Some were, like, family friends or people that just knew us. They chose to not actually do the ice bucket challenge, but then they wrote about how instead they're going to donate to our fund because this is, mm-hmm. you know, something that helps our family and pertains to our family. So it was really cool to see.
So you got to raise awareness of not just a disease, but about your mom in the process.
Yeah. Yes.
And so was that, like, a nice reawakening of it? Because I'm sure there's different emotions when you go through that.
Yeah, every time you really think about it, it makes you sad, I think. But, you know, you just got to keep going. And seeing all these positive things that happened from it, it was a good feeling. And all this money was going to help all of these ALS patients, and that was just amazing. And it was nice. I even saw a couple of ALS patients doing it, and that mm-hmm. was really, I don't know, uplifting.
Yeah.
Because that was another thing, too, because I think they were finally getting attention for something that happened to them. That's so horrible. And like I think they were excited about it too. It was silly. It was fun. And people were giving them attention and money was being donated. And I think it helped a lot of people.
So. Yeah. It's kind of like you were saying about how, oh, this is something we could do.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of people with ALS, it's like, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
Someone else is going to organize an event for me, but
yeah,
they can, maybe they can't pour a bucket, but they can have it poured on them.
Yeah.
Still doing something. So in the process of all of this, since your mom was diagnosed and passed away, have you connected with other ALS families?
Well, we know Matt Bellina. He's mm-hmm. He actually went to Montgomery. He was a couple years older than my sister. So my sister is connected with him. There's also Anthony. I don't know if you remember his video. It went totally viral. It was really silly. He was in a bikini, and then he changed
yeah.
and showed, you know, me and my mom of ALS. And I've actually kind of spoken with him through social media. You know, he, like, leaves comments on anything ALS related on my accounts, my cousins, or my family. So
yeah, he's always liking our Instagram posts.
Yeah,
you feel good.
I know. I really, he has such a good attitude about it, and
mm-hmm.
I love seeing his posts. He recently just did one where his mom, I guess, was upset about, like, the BiPAP, the breathing
mm-hmm.
thing that she needs, and she felt embarrassed or something about it. And he said, like, no, you look beautiful. It's fine. And this, so he took a picture of her to show, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And I really liked that.
So you're able to continue this bond with other families
yeah.
that you share this experience with.
Yeah, I think pretty much if you ever meet anyone who has had ALS in their family, you feel like an instant connection with them. I've met even people on the street just randomly, and somehow it's come up, and you just feel an instant bond with them because they understand it and they know it, and it's kind of just, you become your own community, kind of.
Well, speaking of your own community, do you think that, not that it's ever good to have ALS, don't get me wrong, but do you think it's better to have had it and been impacted by it in this time frame from 2008 now, with all the social media and the connections you can make and those bonds you can, like, you can follow Anthony on Instagram and
right.
Facebook, where you couldn't if you were diagnosed in 1988 or 1998. Do you think that makes a big difference?
Yeah, I think as far as getting donations, I think social media is huge.
And not just donations, but just being able to bond with people.
It's bonding with people, spreading the word, informing people about it. I think that's huge. Because even before this ALS Ice Bucket Challenge and before my mom's diagnosis, I had no idea what it was, you know?
Right.
And because it was just something I'd never heard of, really. So now that I'm so involved with it, I obviously know more. But even with the social media thing, there's so many people now that whether they know the depths of what it is, they still know of it now.
Mm-hmm.
So that is pretty amazing.
So how would you recommend for people to continue to be involved in those conversations? If you were someone that whose mom or dad or family member was diagnosed with ALS, what would your recommendation be to them? Like, well, I went through this. Here's what I would recommend you to do. You don't have to give medical advice.
Right. I think I would probably just be a support to them. That would be my first thing. I think even now, I think I'm more compassionate towards people. I see, unfortunately, a lot of times there's people's parents that are getting sick from other things, not just ALS, and I feel like an instant connection even with them. Like, I know what you're going through. I know what you're feeling right now. Mm-hmm. Even if they have different things, I want to help. I want to help your family. And so support, I think, would be a big thing. And I think it does help to get involved with the charity events. It makes you feel good. And it's like a reminder. It kind of makes it feel like their memory is really never leaving. Mm-hmm. The first ALS walk we did with my mom, and then we continued to do them after without her, obviously. But
no, and which walk was that?
The first one we did, it was the one, it was in Woodbridge. Mm-hmm. So I had driven all the way down from college that morning, and that was just really nice. But now we still do, we've done a bunch of walks, actually. We did the one in by the Hudson in New York. We've done the Woodbridge one a couple times. We did Seaside. And we're going to do the Patriots Stadium one in Somerset. It's
like okay, right by that's house. What the New York
New
chapter.
New York, yes.
And so, New York chapter is great, too.
Yeah.
So it's all going to the same cause, different definitely. Research and patient care. So that you've gotten a lot of good publicity. Things have happened in the past few years. And was this year's event the best yet? Like, was
for
it
our charity?
For your event?
Yeah, I think it did really well, and we made a lot of money, but it did rain that day, so oh. That was unfortunate. But we had two great days the previous years, mm-hmm. So, you know, I figure if we have one rainy day out of 3 years,
yeah.
I can handle that, you know.
Okay, good.
And people still had fun, so,
yeah.
You know.
Well, hopefully that the awareness and more people were, like, wanting to get involved. And
yeah, I think... I mean, everyone now, I feel like, knows what ALS is from the Ice Bucket Challenge.
And that's good. That's
a plus. I feel that everyone on my social media, whether they're friends or not, I feel like they at least know of it now, when before they knew nothing. And that's a good feeling because now, I don't know, I guess people can see what these patients are going through and how hard it is.
And a lot of those people are now willing to dump ice water on their head,
yeah.
Hopefully a second time.
Yeah.
And you know, it's something that... over a year ago, people would like, was the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Not that it's stupid, but, you know, they would be like, why would I do that?
Yeah, that was, yeah, there was some, that was interesting. I actually remember seeing a video. It was someone, I guess it was a person who just kind of wanted to go against what was being popular right now, which was the Ice Bucket Challenge. They made a video about how the ALS Association doesn't give all their money to research. So I was pretty offended, actually, by his video,
mm-hmm.
And I actually took to my Facebook to say something about it because I wanted, at least if I could reach the people on my network and help them understand that this is not how it is, then I did something.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically explained that, no, you know, not all of the money goes to research, but I would not want that.
Right.
I would be upset if all of this money was being dumped into research, which we do need a cure. We do need to find the reason for why ALS is happening, but we also need to help the people that have ALS now, and I that's what's really important to me. You know, they need all this help. They need the therapy and care and equipment and everything else, and that's so important. That's what a large chunk of money goes to, so I think it's important.
Yeah, most of our budget goes to patient care services.
Yeah, it's huge and so important. I even try to explain, you know, some of these wheelchairs, it can cost $20,000. That's a car,
right,
for a wheelchair, and that's a big expense.
And speaking of cars, we have vans that take people to clinics.
Exactly.
We have in-home care. We have the clinics themselves.
Yeah, my mom didn't. She chose not to use like feeding tubes and the voice computers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because she just didn't want that, and she ended up passing away before that.
Right.
And
yeah, it's amazing the technology exists since then.
Yeah, but that's another, you know, expense and thing. But, you know, the ALS Association helps all of that. That's one less burden you have to worry about.
Right.
While you're trying to deal with this.
Yeah, my grandfather, when he passed away in 2007, the iPad wasn't a thing yet. And then when I got here a few years later, there was someone that was using an iPad. They had ALS and they were graduating and using it for their commencement address.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. They were able to just continue living with that. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, that person passed away. But it was really, like, I learned about him as soon as I got here. And it was very people remembered him years later for that moment.
Yeah.
So, awesome. You know, you want to keep, like you said, keep doing things for now. But we don't want to just talk about now. We want to talk about the future.
Yes.
And what's your hopes for, obviously our hope is that we don't need to do anything. We're done. We cure the disease. We can go home. But what are you looking forward to doing in the next few months, years on this?
Like you said, obviously you hope for a cure. I would love it if no one else had to suffer through ALS ever again. But besides that, I think just keeping up awareness, I think that's important. Even though there's less people that get ALS as opposed to, say, people dying from a heart attack or something like that, there's still all of those people that have it. And so don't you want to inform people about it? There's a chance you could get it too. You know, mm-hmm. we don't know what's happening. We don't know why this is happening. So I think it's important to spread awareness and to keep funding and trying to find maybe different medicines. I know they have Rilatec.
Mm-hmm. But that's the one drug so far. That's been
one drug, but it only gives you maybe three months added to your life. And that's really nothing compared to. So I hope there's more options for them. I hope they can find a cure.
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of good research happening now.
Yes.
I've been here 4 years now, and there's a lot of things going on now that are new from 4 years ago. Hopefully there are, right?
So, right.
But still, I know I get frustrated. I want to be done.
You
know,
yeah.
You want some finality to the whole situation. Yeah. Get a cure tomorrow because, like, I think I've heard this presentation before. I want the drug to be approved. I want these treatments.
Always trying to get different things approved and things get shot down all the time. It's hard.
Yeah, because they need to be safe and effective.
Yeah.
You don't want to necessarily get a drug on the market that people spend $10,000 a month on and doesn't do anything. And now, like you said, the costs.
Exactly.
You don't want someone to get nothing out of a drug but then also lose whatever money they have left.
Exactly.
So, well, we're going to keep working on that, and your name fund's going to help with that. And so you would recommend people do a name fund as one of the options?
Definitely. I mean, this name fund has been awesome because it's nice to keep her memory. It's nice to see her plaque on the wall, you know. She's not forgotten. So that, I just, you know, you like to keep her memory alive. Yeah. That's really important to me. And through something bad that happened to her, there's being support and good things happening to other people who have ALS. So it's a nice chain reaction.
And even though I've never met your mom, we see her face every day because they have a name fund and the plaque is on our wall in the office. So,
yeah.
You know, when you have a name fund, that name lives on and on and on. And, you know, we're reminded of it as staff that here are these people that have invested their lives literally in ending this disease.
Yes.
So, well, I appreciate you guys working on this name fund and working to continue it and looking forward to your event that you'll start planning in a few months for next year.
Yeah.
And continue it. So thank you, Lauren, for coming onto our podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And again, if you want to get involved in a name fund, you can email Jeff Klein, jeff@alsphiladelphia.org. And you can find out all sorts of ways to continue to be involved at www.alsphiladelphia.org and follow us on all social media channels at ALS Philadelphia. And look for all of our podcasts at alsphiladelphia.org/podcast. Thanks again.